For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
And now, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. We are live on the Charity Stripe Podcast with your hosts, Alex, Josh, and Nick.
We're back, baby. It's a Charity Stripe. It's free throws because they're free. Fisher DeSopolis, if you're listening on the mightier ESPN 1090. What's up? Happy Thursday, everybody. We have a special guest, SB Nation Celtics blog writer Noah Dalzell is joining us today to talk a little Celtics hoops. Big win last night against the Utah Jazz, the tune of 123 to 107. Jason Tatum, no Porzingis. No Jaylen Brown, no problem. Drops 38 points. Derek White adds 24. The C's go on to beat a lowly foe in Utah. No offense to Lauri Markkanen and all his stands who have actually also tossed. I didn't mention that. Some people came after us in our top 25 list for not having Lauri Markkanen. So can't please everybody. But Noah, thoughts on the win? Thoughts on maybe where we'll start with this, because this is a debate we've been having on our show. Can Jason Tatum and their massive lead in the Eastern Conference Finals, their dominance in the conference, can Jason Tatum be in that MVP race with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jokic, and Luka?
Well, he's okay. Can he, and also can he win the MVP, right? Because yeah, I think he's certainly in the MVP ladder right now. I think, I don't know, NBA.com probably has him at 4 or 5. I haven't checked the most recent rankings there, but he deserves to be in that top five. So, well, I'll let you weigh in if you think he deserves to win the award.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Definitely another good win last night. You know, we've seen the Celtics continue to have these good wins against teams that they should beat, and they, you know, show that they will maintain that type of, you know, focus and clarity. And on the MVP point, I don't think that you can really make a great case for him to be the MVP this year. Just from an efficiency standpoint, like, I'm not even really concerned with like point totals. We see Jokic, I think he's averaging like 26. You don't have to average 34 points a game to be the MVP, but it would be a hard case to make. Just when you're looking at guys like SGA, guys like Jokic that are just more efficient offensively. And then defensively, I do think he has an edge over some other guys, but SGA is like the dark horse candidate to me just because he's such a good two-way player. Like, he's really one of the best guard defenders in the league too. And I think people kind of overlook that a little bit. And so between Jokic and SGA, I think like that's kind of the two-man race, at least in my eyes. And then there's a bunch of other guys that are in the mix, and I think Tatum is one of those guys. But it's going to be hard to win when you have such a good starting lineup. Like, that's the truth. And so to me, it's been like a fun little post All-Star break conversation. He should think that he's one of the best players in the league. Like, you want your superstar to think that, or the best player in the league. But I think just looking at, like, you know, the stats, looking at the, you know, just the responsibilities that each of these guys have, there's not really a great case to be made for him to be the MVP this season.
Yeah, I think it's really going to come down to who gets the one seed, maybe in the Western Conference. If the Thunder can get it by a couple games, I think SGA is going to get that media push, a little voter fatigue on Jokic, right? And I love the point you bring up of the Celtics beating up on bad teams. It's a little reminiscent to cross sport it for us, the Boston fans listening, or the Red Sox in 2018. If you look at the Red Sox record against bad teams, they throughout the entire season just beat up on the bad teams. And won the games they were supposed to, which is what you love to see for the Celtics. But I agree.
How about the Patriots just winning the AFC East?
Well, that's a game.
Tom Brady.
That's an absolute given. So on the Celtics note, is there anybody, because the Eastern Conference is considerably weaker than the Western Conference. Like, and that's not a hot take. It's just a straight up fact. Yeah. Is there anybody in the East that could really contend with the Celtics, or is it just like win or bust?
Yeah, absolutely. I think nothing should be viewed as a certainty right now. Like, I think there's a lot of, you know, we're watching the finals with Nuggets, Celtics. Like, it's probably not going to be the finals, just statistically speaking, because there's so many different combinations that can take place. I worry about Miami personally. Like, I know that they haven't had a great season, but for some reason, it's like we don't learn from history that every single year, all of the national media says Miami has no chance. And every year they, except for that one year, I mean, every year they make a deep run. So I don't really understand why. I don't know why we're not watching, we're not learning from history. We're not kind of, we have kind of like a short-term memory about them. So to me, that's going to be a tough series. Like it's a team that, you know, for the last couple of years has had the Celtics number a little bit, and they know how to play against Brown and Tatum. I still think the Celtics should win that series, and I don't think it'll go to seven. But to say that that's a cakewalk, like, I don't think that's the case. And Milwaukee's one of those teams that I wouldn't be surprised if Damian Lillard starts, you know, turns a corner and starts playing better in the playoffs. And if so, like, then you see the Milwaukee team that a lot of people picked to win it all before the season started. But I from what I've seen this year, I think that's most likely not going to be the case. So to me, those are like the two teams that have the best chance. The Knicks, when they were healthy with OG, like that one stretch after the trade, they looked great, and then they just lost like literally everybody. So it's hard to even evaluate where they're at. But there's a couple teams out there that, you know, could give the Celtics a run for their money. They should still win, but it's not like it's going to be a cakewalk.
I agree.
It's interesting with the Heat. I actually feel like their roster is better this year than it was.
I was literally thinking that.
I mean, the addition, obviously, of Jaime Jaquez and Terry Rozier has been playing really, really good basketball. Not to mention, like, Jimmy Butler's, like, not trying, and you can tell. And, like, he's not playing. They've, like, rested him on a lot of weird, suspect injuries, right? So they'll come to play during the playoffs. The Bucks, it's like they just don't have the 3 through 5 on their starting lineup to deal with the Celtics. Like, Derek White is going to really be on full display in that series, right? Defensively and offensively,
right.
What he was able to do last night, you know, without Brown, without Porzingis, I thought he was tremendous. He has been, what's it like just around the city and the buzz around Derek White? Because he is one of the best two-way guards. You talk about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, obviously they're not the same caliber of player, but in all-star talks, like, Derek White was mentioned and he should have been. What's the hype around the city for guys like Porzingis, Drew Holiday, and the always blossoming Derek White?
I would say Derek White was more than mentioned. I mean, we had the Boston media machine on the Derek White All-Star campaign.
Yeah.
He's Derek White to me, and this is just like off of living here and going to games and covering the team. He's to me seems to be like the most beloved player on this team. Just like when he comes out on the court during warmups, like a lot of times I'm, you know, talking to someone or doing something else, and you just hear this like loud applause from the fans that are there early, and it's like, okay, Derek White's here. Like, that's how you know he's taking the court. So to me, that's like, awesome. He kind of solidified that when he had that game winner in game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, the
tip. That was kind of like, it could have been just like this one-off, like really amazing play that didn't pan out. But I think instead it kind of became like the beginning of his legacy in Boston. And
he went with the rebrand too. He shaved the head. Like, right. The fact that Marcus Smart has essentially been, he was the heart of the team, and he's been replaced by Derek White, and Derek White has done such a great job. Like, I would have never expected that, knowing what Derek White was in San Antonio, a player that I liked, but not a player that I thought was going to be a fringe all-star and a guy that was a really important, maybe third best, fourth best player on a title team any given night, right? Like,
we thought that was plausible for a little while. It was him and Murray, and then Murray just pulled ahead in San Antonio, and then he became the prize pony, and White almost the afterthought. But I was going to mention the Smart thing if you didn't. Smart was the heartbeat of the team, but like, Derek White comes back and he fills his exact role, plus the Celtics get Drew Holiday. Right. And like, who is, I love Brogdon, and I thought Brogdon was great for us, obviously winning a Sixth Man of the Year award, but Drew Holiday is a true bona fide all-star level player. And he's a guy that could, I mean, we had this debate now on our show, like, if this was 6 years ago, we would have been when the Atlanta Hawks sent like almost their entire starting five to the all-star game, the Celtics probably could have in a given year where there weren't so many strong players. Like, Porzingis has been paramount to this team. Drew Holiday has been playing amazing basketball.
Yeah.
And the clutch basketball too at points. Derek White, maybe, you know, the most all-star worthy of the three. So yeah. And on the Bucks note, I will say, like, you know, Doc Rivers, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain type thing is what's going on for me right now. And it's like, dude, you got your ship in Boston. Didn't work out in LA and Philly. I think it's time to close the door type thing.
At least their defense has gotten better, to Doc's credit.
It couldn't get much worse.
I don't know. I like Doc. Like, after hearing him on air and getting a little bit more of his personality.
He's dope. He's great.
He's great. I've warmed up to him more than I was cooled on him, obviously, when he was coaching with the 76ers. But I kind of feel bad for him now.
Yeah. No, would you rather see – because this is how I feel. Would you rather see Miami early? I mean, you might not have a choice with the way it's like looking right now at the play-in. Would you rather just see them early and get the monkey off the back early than have to see them when they get ahead of steam kind of in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Definitely. And that's why, like, paying attention to the standings right now, like, whether they're the eighth seed and they play the Celtics or they are the Eastern Conference Finals matchup, like, it really doesn't matter. Because for a couple of reasons. One, I think it's just a series you're going to get banged up in. And so, like, on one hand, like, yes, it's, you know, now you're going to maybe have some lingering things through the playoffs, but I think you can withstand that physicality and that just the way that they play better when you're fresh, when you're coming off of a week break before the playoffs start, than like late in the playoffs when you're already, everybody's already beat up and everything. So that's one piece. And then the other piece is, I feel like the 2022 Celtics, like the way they didn't duck that Nets first round matchup, but then they swept the Nets, it almost gave them a boost that they were able to then go and beat Milwaukee, go and make the finals, you know, almost win it all. I think there was like an element of confidence that they gained because they didn't avoid that matchup like other teams maybe did. And they actually then, you know, swept them. And that was kind of a statement series. And doing the same with Miami this year, I think, like, just show, you know, everybody knows about Game 7. Everybody knows about Jaylen Brown. Everybody knows, like, the narratives have been talked about every day since that series happened. To be able to get them out of the way in the first round, to me, is like the best thing that could happen in the first round for this team if they're going to win a championship this year. So from a, you know, media fan perspective, I think that would be a really interesting way to play out. I don't think it'll be an easy series. I don't think it'll be a sweep. I agree that this is a better Miami team than the one we saw last year at points. I also think Miami is going to get better throughout the playoffs if given the opportunity, kind of the way they did last year, like just clicking and riding that momentum. So maybe like don't give them that opportunity the way that the year that they lost the Bucks, you know, they didn't have, they just kind of were a blip, you know. So that's my take on it, at least.
Yeah. And on the Jaylen Brown point, one of the debates we've been having is whether he's the quote unquote top 25 player in the league. And obviously those lists are always so fluid, especially at the back end. Counting stats are down a little bit, but his play has been, we were just discussing earlier, has been up, and he's an all-star once again. Do you think Brown is a top 25 player? And if so, where does he fall for you?
I'd have to make some difficult decisions, most likely, like actually sit down and think about it. But to me, most likely, yes. Just if you're accounting availability too, like if I could pick 25 players to like actually be on a team, or, you know, 25 players you can count on, he'd be there just because he's available, right? And he's been available throughout his career. And also he's a two-way player, and he has been a very good two-way player this year. Like at times, just watching this team, he has been the best defender on the Celtics. And that's very high praise when you have Jrue Holiday and Derek White and Porzingis, and, you know, we have a very good defensive lineup, but he's usually the one that's tasked with guarding Luka, guarding Steph, guarding, you know, the other team's best player. And he's done a really good job. I think at times, like in his career, he hasn't been the best off-ball defender, and that's been his weakness, like just kind of losing focus. And so they've also kind of like maximized his defensive skills by putting him on ball as much as possible. And I think he's locked in on that end. So between the availability piece and between the increased efficiency, like he has been more efficient this year than years past, and the improved defense, like I do think he's probably a top 25 player. I would like to, it's possible that if I actually said that and did the exercise, I would realize that there's somebody I'm leaving out. I
feel like we got to get you to do it. You'll have to do it.
You'll have to do it and then DM us. He was like 26. I mean,
We did it 2 weeks ago, and I'd probably have him in my 25, 24, 23 spot now if I reevaluated, just because of all the things that you said. And I was listening to someone talk the other day about, and this is a follow-up question for you as someone who sees things close to the team, and you're in and around the locker room, like what's the chemistry like right now? Because there are so many big personalities, he gets the big deal, he gets the super max, right? And that hasn't really been a topic of conversation because the Celtics are winning. And he's been playing really good basketball. The conversation has been around Tatum and the MVP. So I think maybe the fact that that is the main conversation with the Celtics, and the fact that they're just a really good team, has helped the rest of the kind of the narratives not be there, right? Like, oh, Porzingis isn't saying something about he's not getting enough touches, right? It's not the same Porzingis that was in Dallas. He's admitted, you know, that he's matured as a guy. And obviously I think having Jrue Holiday, I can imagine helps tremendously, because if there's ever been a guy in the NBA who has fit into a role no matter where he's been, it's been Jrue Holiday. But what is the chemistry like? He also has a ring. That helps, certainly. What's the chemistry like with this team right now? And who are kind of like the go-to leaders in certain moments when things are down, which is very rarely with this team?
Yeah. So I'll disclaim I'm getting the media lens, right? So it's what they say, what they present right. to us. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot that I'm not aware of. But I would say this looks like a team that, like, really loves playing together, that everyone is bought in, everybody is sacrificing. And I think, like, part of it is just this, there's not even this feeling of, like, it actually feels like a sacrifice. Like, the way that they talk about it, like, there have been some games down the stretch where Porzingis has been a little bit iced out. And, like the first Nuggets loss, like, he definitely should have gotten more touches down the stretch. And they asked him about it afterwards. You know, they said, like, you know, other reporters were saying, you know, do you feel like you should have gotten more touches? And he was like, I don't care. Like, I'm not, that's not my concern. Like, maybe we'll go back at the film and we'll see, like, there's a couple opportunities that we missed. But, like, I trust what we did down, you know, I trust the decisions that we made as a team down the stretch. Like, I think that that has been the general attitude from everybody. You don't have guys that are sitting there being like, I should be getting more. I should be, you know, getting mine. I think last year you did have those guys, and that's not a knock at those guys, but, like, Malcolm Brogdon reminded us very often that he could be getting, he could be a starter in this league and he could be, you know, scoring more points. And he was awesome in his role, and I am a big Malcolm Brogdon fan, but, like, you could tell that he was really feeling the sacrifice of coming off the bench. He talked about mm-hmm. it on a very regular basis. I think Grant Williams, like, was on a contract year, and there was a little bit going on there. So, like,
I mean, even Pritch, like, was talking yeah. at points last season, right? Like,
he wanted to trade. Like,
yeah,
everybody's kind of, like, settled down. I don't think there's, you don't have this. I mean, I know there are a few guys that are playing for a contract, but you don't have, like, that feel around the team that, like, there's a bunch of guys playing for a contract. Like, they're playing for a championship. That's very clear. And then from a leadership standpoint, you know, Tatum is obviously going to be one of the leaders, but he's not, like, that's not his natural vocal, like, strength.
Yeah.
Al Horford effectively becomes the leader in a lot of circumstances just because he's been around so long. He's been around this team now in multiple stints. Everybody talks about him like he's godlike figure, like his work ethic, like, we have to do it for Al. Like, he just, you ask, like, it's kind of like a joke. I know if I ask Joe or one of the players about Al, it's gonna just go into this, like, a full compliment rant, like, every single time. And then I think Jaylen Brown has taken a lot of the leadership on him, you know, on himself too this year. Like, he's talked a lot about being the leader, being a leader, like, what he tells the team. He gave a speech the other night to the team about, like, not taking this for granted, being on such a good basketball team. He gives that speech apparently every year. So I think, like, those are the guys that have kind of stepped up in that role and been kind of the de facto leaders of this team. And then you have a coach that everybody's fully bought into, which has made all the difference too.
That's, love to hear that. And I'm going to get to him in a second, but on the Al point, like, if the Celtics win a ship, like, Al is in the conversation to get his number retired. Like, he's had two really strong stints in Boston. One of which he was in the Defensive Player of the Year candidate All-Star, and the second one where he's, like, been the Udonis Haslam almost of the team, except he's actually playing super valuable minutes and contributing at a high level. And yeah, I mean, it's just the pedigree of Holiday, and you talk about Porzingis too. I think it's really interesting. If you send a selfish basketball player hypothetically to Washington, a guy that wants to win but also is a selfish player, like, let's say now it's like Jordan Poole, you send them to Washington, they see, like, basketball purgatory and be like, this is just so terrible being here. Like, I will sacrifice whatever I have to sacrifice in the future. It doesn't matter. Like, he's like, I don't care as long as I don't go back to a team like Washington. I'm for certain, like, he's like that.
I can't wait to see when Poole gets to his next team to see if he's actually like that, because I have some thoughts and some predictions about how that will go. But yeah.
I don't know if I want to throw Kuz in that just to throw him in there, but I can tell you what, Kuz, who's having a career year statistically, I bet you the next team that Kuzma goes to is a winning team, and I bet you the sacrifices he's making are left, right, front, and center. He's holding the door open for everybody and their mother, like, that to that point. Like, don't want to go back to that. And so I think, you know, Porzingis, like, being here and, like, seeing, like, okay, I could actually be a part of something that can win right now and be a huge contributor, like, as the big man, like, you're going to sacrifice whatever you can, quote unquote, sacrifice to get the ultimate prize. So is it on Missoula, is it ring or bust for him? Like, if they don't get to the finals, is he done, or does he have a longer leash, you feel?
I think he has a longer leash. And part of that is because this team has had 3 coaches in 3.5 years So I think, like, part of why he got a second year here is because, like, you don't want to have a new coach every year. Like, Tatum had, you want to have continuity and buy-in. And so I don't think he's going to, I don't think his job is necessarily on the line, provided that like nothing goes crazy here in the playoffs. I don't think, I hate the ring or bust thing just because it's really hard to win a championship. And I feel like everybody talks about it like, okay, this team is guaranteed to win or this team should absolutely win. Like Denver is the favorite. Denver should be the favorite to win. Like, I know, I don't think the odds represent that, but like,
the odds are tripping right now. They are.
This is like, in my opinion, like I don't even pay attention to the odds because a 97% chance for the Celtics to win the conference finals last year was just, I quit on the odds at that point because that just doesn't even make any sense. But
yeah,
like I think Denver should still be considered the favorite because they have, you know, a duo that's done it before, that and the best player in the world by a pretty significant margin. That being said, the Celtics have a really good chance. And if they, you know, if they play their cards right and they stay healthy and they don't, you know, they don't have any major letdowns or a really bad week of basketball, which we've seen what can happen to, with a bad week of basketball, like they should have a really good chance here. But Joe, from everything I understand, Brad Stevens is all in on him. The players are bought in. I think he's a really, really smart basketball coach. Like that's been my impression. And this is my first year covering a team. And so, you know, I go to all of his pressers and I learn a lot just from sitting there, like the way that he understands the game, the way that he talks about the game. And you can just tell that he's surrounded himself with a really smart and competent staff of assistants too.
Yep.
And last year he didn't have his own assistants. Like he had Ime's assistants, and that's a really challenging dynamic. And so this year you're seeing a guy who's confident, who's comfortable. And I think that everybody's bought into the system, and that's why they've been such a historically great regular season team, at least.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the insight we brought you on for.
Beautiful. The assistants that he brought in are all well-respected and or like burgeoning, going to be coaches down the line, like head coaches down the line. This win against the Jazz like was really like, people don't talk about like Will Hardy's a great coach, and he was also an assistant at Boston, and he like came through the same pipeline as Missoula. Like that's a really impactful win for Joe, especially having two of his best players not playing. Like that's, those are the type of wins that I think are meaningful, at least that I pay attention to and look for a coach to do, because like he's young. So the narratives can come into play sometimes, and like to see that they're that focused is cool. And I think his adjustments mid game and just the general like feel for the offense, it feels like there's more of a structure there and more of a scheme. And I know that, you know, that's what he brought last year and high volume from the 3-point line. Right. Like, and that was one thing that can kind of be their Achilles heel at times when the shooting isn't falling. I'll tell you what, like when I've watched them this year, it's like those players are all such good shooters that I never feel like any of them are missing. Like I have a list of players where if they have an open three, do I feel like they're going to make it every single time? And the Celtics, it's hard. Like, I think that Drew's going to make it every time he gets a corner three. I really think it's going in. Derek White, I think it's going in every time. KP, but like, he's Hauser. So many. But Hauser's a little different. Like, he's like.
That's like your like sixth shooter. Guy. Yeah, you're your right, sixth you're guy. Right. Like, if your sixth guy gets the ball and he's got an open three and you feel great about that, like,
well, when exactly a guy puts that much be. Arc on the ball, I'm like, yeah, it's going in. That's an absolute moonshot. I agree on the Nuggets, though. I mean, I think it was very telling in that game.
Yeah.
Do you and bringing up the 3-point shooting? Do you feel like they're going to have to come up with some sort of strategy to mesh the 1-on-1 ball with Brown and Tatum with the free flowing offense, drive and kick, five out, everybody rip the open three when you have it? Because that game against the Nuggets to me looked a lot like the games where they lost against the Warriors in the finals, where it felt like if the shots aren't falling, and the shots weren't falling for the Nuggets, most importantly in that game,
he shot a lot more. I just want to throw that out there.
But they always do, right? Like that's their general game plan and approach. Do you feel like that is one of the screws that needs to be tightened with the last 17 games here in the regular season, of just kind of putting those two types of play, styles of play together for the Celtics, so they're ready for anything in the playoffs and potentially in the finals?
Yeah. I think you're onto something. I got some final flashbacks too. And most of it is when Tatum plays this kind of like more passive, looks a little bit out of it. Like he has a way about him that once in a while when he's struggling, it looks different than how some other stars look like when they're struggling. Like he just looks kind of out of it. And that's why it sparks like a national discourse around one or two bad games. But ultimately, to me, my biggest takeaways from the Nuggets game was they need to have a better defensive scheme for Jokic and for Aaron Gordon.
Aaron Gordon. I mean,
living off of those. Like, I want to be Aaron Gordon. Like, he's just standing there and he's getting the best looks and
cherry picking.
Right. Exactly. So,
Cover the short corner. Like, he's going, right. He's going to be there. Like, you can't, right. I think I saw four layups or layups and or dunks in the first half. So that's schemed, right? That's them, Malone going, here's where you're going to be open and Jokic's going to find you every single time. That was a glaring issue. Yeah.
And some of it's not going to, some of it's like, you're not going to fix because they're the Denver Nuggets. There's a reason, like they have a very, very good offense. I think Al Horford is the key here. You didn't see much of him in the regular season in these big matchups. Like, that's kind of been the theme over the last few years is when it's, you know, playing the 76ers in March, Al Horford's not guarding Embiid. Now you're playing him in April, May, and you're seeing a different guy in a different scheme. So I'm hopeful that that's part of what we're going to see. That's maybe a wrinkle to what we didn't see during the regular season. I still think he has it. I still think he has the defensive ability.
Yeah.
That Porzingis on Jokic, it was tough. Like, it's not what Porzingis was brought in for. It's tough, right? It's tough for Anthony Davis, right? Like, it's not a good matchup for anybody, but they're going to need to come up with something a little bit different. But then as far as just like the remaining games of the season, I just would love to see like a couple more like late game execution games. Like, and I don't mean like 5 minutes left, 5 minute game. I mean, a 5 point game. I mean, like, you're down by one with 10 seconds to go. Like, let's run that back like once or twice more before the playoffs start, because it hasn't looked pretty in the couple of opportunities they've had this season. So to me, that's my biggest concern going into the playoffs is like, you're going to have a few of those games and it can't be an automatic loss like the way that it kind of has been this season.
The ESPN headline of the, you know, like, the Celtics have been blowing people out the entire season, so they don't know what it's like to win close games at the end. And that's exactly why they lose in the second round or whatever.
I think like getting a few more close games in there is probably the best thing that can happen to this team. Like, it's fun to watch
against the Pistons. Like, let the Pistons back in a little bit. You know, a team that you know you could probably keep. You can get some games against. Yeah. I love the Horford point because I think he's still got it too. I just don't think he has it for 82 games plus playoffs.
And that's why they're not pushing him. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to save your bullets a little bit there. No, you've been fantastic. We always ask all our guests this. We'll have to get you back if your game come playoff time. Your favorite sports memory in your entire life, watching, playing, anything you've ever experienced.
Favorite? Oh, playing. Okay.
Anything. It can be anything. Like, we've heard, like, Miles Turner's favorite is him in Little League in sixth grade.
Okay. So not to sound like another like washed up NBA writer who like wishes they were in the NBA, but I would say mine is in high school. I played against our rival. I went to Brookline High right outside of Boston. Played against our rival school of Newton North. We actually lost this game, so I hope that doesn't make me a selfish player, but I was a shooting guard and I was just like, couldn't miss basically. And I remember like now when I watch a player go on like a real heater, I'm always like, okay, I'm glad that happened to me once in this really high profile game, because now I at least know what they're feeling. Like, this feeling of like, as long as you
can be
like, centimeter of space, I'm going to hit a three. And I think I had like eight threes or nine threes or something like that. And I was like, I remember we lost that game too. And I was like grinning on my walk home. Probably that, the Celtics have never won a championship since I've started following. I started following in 2009. So it's been a lot. And I don't follow other sports really. So it's going to have to be that the loss in senior year of high school, unfortunately.
Look, no. Well, Cat 60 points vibes there. No, that's
very, exactly. Very. And I felt for him. It's like, come on, don't ruin his moment. Don't yell at him.
Tell him where they can find you.
Twitter is the best place, at Noah Dalzell NBA. And then most of my Celtics coverage is on CelticsBlog.com, which is really good website. You can find lots of analysis and articles and things. Most of the live game updates on my Twitter.
Awesome. Noah Dalzell, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next time. Fans out there, hit your free throws because they're free. We outcho. We love you. Fisher Tsopoulos.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
And now, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. We are live on the Charity Stripe Podcast with your hosts, Alex, Josh, and Nick.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.